Welcome to the Azure for Sports podcast, hosted by the Azure for Sports team at Microsoft.
Hello, and welcome to the Azure for Sports podcast. I'm Suzanne Tedrick, and as always, I'm joined by my Azure partner in crime, Mr. John Flynn. What's going on, John?
Hey, Suzanne. How's it going?
It's going good. It's going good. I'm well caffeinated this time around for Monday. So it's going to be excited. And I'm really excited for our guest for today's podcast. We are joined today by Brandon Mucho, the founder and CEO of Swooped. And Brandon's company had the awesome honor of winning the startup competition at the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference earlier this year, which was sponsored by Microsoft for Startups. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Why don't we get started by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and about Swooped?
Yeah, definitely. So Swooped is a meta search engine for sports tickets. So you can think of us just like Kayak in the way that we aggregate offerings across the ticketing marketplaces, that is, and distill that information down into a single digestible web page for the end user. So rather than having to manually compare platform to platform and sift through different UIs, we're streamlining that whole process in a singular platform.
So Brandon, congratulations again for winning the first place in the Microsoft for Startups MIT Sloan competition. I was fortunate enough to be there and see you guys while you were in Boston as well. So that's awesome. What does that actually mean for you, though, to go in there and place first in that? How does that feel?
Yeah, it was an incredible honor. There were some really amazing companies that we were lucky to compete with in that competition. And to receive that validation from an esteemed group of judges and just the overall reception from that community in general was a huge lift in validation for us, an incredible momentum boost, certainly generated a lot of investor interest. And it's something that we haven't today taken any outside capital. And day by day, we're inching closer to being ready for that. But it certainly has opened up a ton of doors and started a ton of conversations for us to jump into that when we're ready, hopefully in the fall.
That's amazing. That's awesome. So how long have you guys been operating now in your bootstrap fashion?
Yeah, I've been doing this full time since November of 2020. It's been a very slow and painful burn. We did a beta last summer and basically have been rebuilding since then and just trying to get this into a really great place where the user experience is as close to what I envisioned it could be, and that where we believe that the user is getting enough value where they're not going to have to go and double check our work or use multiple platforms to find that end goal of the best ticket.
Yes, spot on. The customer experience is everything. I love your social media post. I think it's LinkedIn, where you say, please provide your feedback. The more critical, the more better it is. So I love the fact that you're really listening to the voice of the customers. We deal with the subject of ticketing a lot. And I love your analogy of making Kayak for ticketing, right? Because I can be honest, as a fan of sports and multiple teams in the market I live in and in other markets that I will travel to, it is not easy buying a ticket. And it's also not easy understanding the value that you are paying for that ticket, how that actually translates into an experience or a seat at that venue here. So what made you go into this realm of making ticketing easy?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge sports nut myself. I actually have my master's in sports management. I've always dreamed about being an entrepreneur and being able to be an entrepreneur within sports. That just makes it that much better. I'm a huge Georgetown basketball fan, went there. And so every year Georgetown plays at the Garden, and a group of my closest friends, we're about eight of us, are constantly looking for tickets. And of course, I'm the one that always gets tasked with that responsibility of setting the options. And it was just getting really annoying setting an option at 10 a.m. and then you might get one or two responses, and then it's 11 p.m. and you have someone in chiming in at that last hour. And I just felt there had to be a completely objective way to know what the best ticket was, what the best prices were, and it just didn't exist. And it was a real pain point for me that I was passionate about it and confident I could solve.
That's awesome. I have an immense amount of respect for entrepreneurs, right? What you do as a segment of the business community, building something from an idea to inception, is fascinating to me, right? I think you guys are superheroes. I really do. When did you realize that this is it? This isn't just something I'm going to do so I don't have to deal with all my buddies chiming in at the 11th hour on the 8 tickets I won for Georgetown at the Garden. When did you realize this is it? I've got something here. There's a bit of lightning in the bottle here that I'm going to turn into a real business. When was that moment?
Yeah, it's a great question. I actually had a t-shirt company in college, and that was a fun, my first foray into entrepreneurship, and felt like I just wanted to jump right into something right out of college. And fortunately, my parents guided me out of that decision. And part of that was being able to play a critical role in several early stage startups and just learning from founders. The first startup I was a part of was a blockchain company. We were building a NFT market. This was actually back in 2017, 2018. And of course, we were too early there. So there's tons of lessons to be learned. I was fortunate, again, to learn. I worked for Baron Davis for a bit. He's got his hands in a bunch of different ventures. It was just an incredible training ground for me to see these amazing entrepreneurs pursue ideas and be incredibly passionate about it. And I felt that I had learned enough along the way. I had spoken to enough people, enough potential customers. I met my co-founder, Skyler, throughout this process, and his background is heavily in ticketing. So it was just a culmination of validation actually over the course of, I would say, about 7 months. And what actually finally convinced me to do it was I was listening to a How I Built This podcast about, it was Supergroup actually, and the founder's name is escaping me, but the way she just simplified everything, but she had this problem she wanted to solve of making chemical free suntan lotion, and she just did it. Like it was, and she just figured it out along the way. She grew the business along the way. And as soon as I listened to that podcast, I remember I was in the car, and I think 2 days later, I put in my 2 weeks notice for the job I was at, and it was go time. Yeah, it's a decision I certainly have not looked back since.
That's amazing, Brandon. Selfishly, one of my own questions, and then I'll get to the next one, is, so you just knew with every fiber of your being, this is what I want to do, and this is what I'm going to do. How did you have the courage to make that decision? Because it's really, it takes a lot to say that I'm going to quit what's good and stable and decide to just go off on my own and not have the security blanket of the known to help me. So what was the thing that made you say, I'm going to do this?
Yeah.
And go through with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm incredibly fortunate to have a very strong support system around me, be that through friends, family, mentors, and was able to really flesh out this concept with them, do some analysis as to what my life could look like if I didn't do this, or if I held off on it, or continued kind of the path I was on. And I've just always loved building things. And you're right, it is an incredibly hard decision. And it's something that I think I was a bit naive in at the moment, especially. And it's something that I've learned in retrospect is actually how hard that decision truly is. I don't know if there ever really is a right time or right answer. Again, I think I just had so much conviction in the problem and the solution, and timing was just right. COVID was starting to ease up a little bit. Live events, there was a return coming. NBA Finals had happened, obviously, with no fans, but you were seeing that live events were coming back in full force. Live Nation was increasing their earnings guidance, things of that nature. And so the optimism just across the market was becoming increasingly more confident. And I think that I kind of just used that momentum to go for it.
Kudos to you for being able to do that, especially in the face of uncertainty. So I guess going off of something that you said, what was surprising to you that was a huge challenge, and how did you deal with that?
Yeah, even having a co-founder, Skyler, is his name, Skyler Hoverston, and we have a great relationship. He's in LA though, and I'm in New York. So, you know, it's a very lonely process, even having someone that you're doing it with. It's very lonely. I've actually found kind of a forum on LinkedIn where, you know, I've allowed myself to be vulnerable, and you really share insights as to my own experience. I was fortunate. I spoke at Columbia's entrepreneurship program or entrepreneurship class the other month. And that was a big part of my story, was not glamorizing what this entrepreneurship experience is like. You could easily read the headlines of so-and-so company raised this amount of money, and even us, that we won the startup competition. And there's so much that happens in between the lines, and there's a lot of waiting, especially as well. I'm not an engineer by trade, and I'm not an engineer at all, actually, for the matter of fact, and I can't go in there and write code and accelerate any of that progress. A lot of it can be stagnation too, and stagnation makes you question everything. I think you're constantly questioning, am I doing the right thing? Is this the right product? And it's a really hard, hard balance. I think it truly tests you mentally, emotionally, and it really puts your conviction to the test to just keep through it. Yeah, it's been a very challenging process, also very rewarding, and I'm excited to get this product out there and see the impact we have on the user experience.
Thank you for your vulnerability and your honesty and not glamorizing the pathway for an entrepreneur, because yes, there can be tremendous reward, but there's a lot that goes on underneath. They talk about icebergs. We only see the tip of the iceberg, but we don't see everything that's underneath of the surface of the water, all of the hard work and effort and things that need to go in it to make a business successful.
I was just thinking about how hardships come about. Some of them you expect, you're doing something new and you've got to prove value and talk about value. But then you give your 2 weeks notice and you launch a ticketing company in the face of a pandemic, right? When things were shut down, it's like one of those like, oh crap moments for sure. How did that, or did it at all, affect the way that you felt about starting this and continuing down this path of a ticketing business in light of uncertainty that we will come back, but we don't know when kind of moment?
Yeah, I think I was fortunately a bit naive in that sense. The beginning of a company is, from my experience at least, is the most exciting part when you're envisioning what that can become and you're working on mock-ups, and it's just this avalanche of excitement. And I think that honestly probably took precedent over better judgment that some might have seen the economic landscape and thought, oh, maybe now is not the best time to be doing this and giving up something steady. But yeah, I just go back to conviction and what I wanted to build, and that conviction turning into momentum and excitement, and just using that as my fuel and my energy to run with it.
That's awesome. I love that avalanche of excitement. I love that saying. And that's cool.
Yeah.
And it's so true as well, the early stages. And then I think it builds. Maybe avalanche is a phenomenal analogy here, because as you build up steam, as this avalanche keeps going, just pick up momentum and keep going down. Thank you for letting us probe into the mind of an entrepreneur and what it takes to start something. So fast forward a little bit to like, great, we're doing it, it's cool. How do you settle on, from a technology standpoint, how do you settle on, I know what I want to build, and you said you're not an engineer, right? So how do you get from the what to the how, and then how do you choose the underlying technologies for that?
Yeah, again, I've just been super fortunate throughout this process. You know, I've had two developers working on this with me from the beginning. They're both New York based, and it was just as simple as sharing this vision with my family, and my aunt told my cousin's boyfriend's an engineer, and he's a front-end engineer, his best friend's a back-end engineer, and so that was it. I certainly went into it knowing I did not want to outsource talent in terms of sending that abroad. I just knew how much a concept will change and that it just wouldn't be feasible. So again, it was just like all of these pieces were falling in at the right time in terms of I met Skylar, then I met Ari and Dean, who were the developers' names, and Peter, the designer, and it was just constantly, I had a need, and the next thing I knew, something came up. Even Katie Weeks, she's one of our advisors, and she helps with marketing. And again, it was the same kind of thing. We were introduced pretty fortuitously. We were getting ready to launch our beta, and I needed help around that. And it's just constantly been the right place, the right time. I do think it's a question I get asked a lot of, like, how do you get started? And I think the best answer is just, it's often within your own network, just asking, hey, who knows an engineer? And if you don't know an engineer, there's platforms like Upwork and TopTap where you can hire talent for relatively little money to get started. There's always things you can be doing, even if it's just taking screenshots of other platforms in terms of user interface or experiences that you like. You don't have to have a technical background to do any of that stuff. You don't have to have a technical background to even make really drawings of what you think the interface or experience should look like. So yeah, I think it's just when one obstacle arises, like figuring out how can solve that, get around it. Is there something else you can be doing while you're figuring that obstacle out, and just never letting momentum come to a halt?
Momentum's everything. I think that's great. And also you mentioned about being very fortunate, but one thing I've figured out is that the harder you work, the more fortunate you seem to be. I think it would be remiss to not acknowledge the burning of the midnight oil, or burning the candle on both ends as it gets to starting these endeavors off, correct?
Yeah, you got to put yourself in a position to allow yourself to be lucky, and that comes with the work. You're completely right. It is a part of it, but yeah, like you said, you have to do the work to get yourself there.
Exactly. So one of the things I love about Swoop is, and it's a frustration on other platforms that I don't get the same experience, is that when I search using Swoop and then I click on a section I want, I get a price range, but I get a picture of the view from the seat or from the section. I think that's critical. And it's one of those sort of like duh moments, right? If I'm on another platform and I click a seat, I'm like, okay, check out now. You got 15 minutes. Well, hold on a minute. I don't know what the view looks like. Am I in a good seat or a bad seat? I think that's phenomenal. So how much of that, again, is your idea, or how much of that is from your beta or your listening to the early adopters of it? How does that process work, Brent?
Yeah, that is a heavy combination of my kind of design process in terms of just constantly thinking fan-centric. Again, I feel fortunate that because I'm such a sports nut, knowing what I'm looking for, I'm still building it for myself. And the other part of it is definitely the beta. It was a huge oversight we had in that we are essentially an information company. So we have access to an incredible amount of data, and we were basically showing you all of that at once. And that can become tens of thousands of data points for a single event very quickly. And so it was something we had drastically overlooked, was that the importance of a seat map. Again, it's things we played around with. We've honed in on the seat map being a differentiator for us. We're moving towards, right now it's 2D, but we are moving towards a 3D map. So you will only see this experience continue to get better. We have great partners that are helping us accomplish these goals from the user experience side of things. And again, it's a fan-centric approach. That's how I like to describe it. And I think it, again, goes back to the ethos of just not overcomplicating things. It's just one foot in front of the other.
It's so important to keep that in mind too, where I think sometimes in the habit of wanting to do the latest and the greatest, you try to overcomplicate and stuff in more features than is necessary, but you really just want to listen to the heart of what does the fan want? What does the fan want more than anything else? And keeping true to that credence, I think, is incredibly important. So I guess, how do you do that? Like, how do you balance the desire to do the latest and greatest, which I think to some extent you might have to do, but listening for those signals from fans?
Yeah, it is for sure been one of the top three hardest things. I have so many ideas and features that I'm excited to bring to market. It's, again, like just for mentors and from advisors, how can you start as small as possible while achieving this value proposition? And just knowing how long it takes to get the simple value proposition that we're trying to build out the door, really honing in on what are the absolute essential features that have to exist in order for this experience to accomplish what we're trying to deliver to the end user. We certainly have a long list of items that we are excited to build. But again, we're also handicapped by resources. And that's something that we're certainly cognizant of, and just want to make sure that when we are and where we are allocating our resources, we're going to be seeing a direct, you know, ROI on the user experience and that investment.
No, absolutely. You just have to. There's too many things to do and so many limited resources for you to be able to do that. I realize that you're not an engineer by trade. Yeah. But could you describe to us what makes Swoop work? Like, what, from a high level, how does it work underneath the hood?
Yeah. So, you know, it's identical to other meta search engines. And so we plug in with direct API access to ticketing marketplaces. From there, we ingest inventory feeds on a specific time cadence, and we'll constantly refresh that data so that we're getting the most up-to-date live feeds. In turn, the user's getting the most up-to-date live feeds. And so once we have ingested those API feeds, we'll go ahead and basically map that inventory across the marketplaces to one another, and then distill that down into that singular ticket that you'll see. Very high level, it really comes down to data aggregation and mapping.
That's really helpful. How does it, I guess, differentiate from some of the other offerings that are out there? I could see where someone might say that, oh, it's similar to, oh Lord, I'm forgetting the name of the service. But if you could describe, like, how is this a particular unique offering that's in the market right now?
Yeah, so there's actually no other search engines for sports tickets or live events for that matter. So I'm guessing the company you were thinking of is SeatGeek. But the way that the ticketing industry works actually is that there are thousands of ticket brokers throughout the US. And so those are the ones that are buying that primary inventory. And so what they'll do is they'll use these back-end distribution platforms, two of which are actually partners, and that's Logitix and One Ticket. And what those platforms will do is they will manage the inventory for them. So they'll distribute it out to each of these marketplaces, such as StubHub, SeatGeek, Vivid Seats, GameTime, TickPick, et cetera. And then they'll dynamically price it from there. So each of those platforms in turn will create their own markups, but a majority of the inventory is actually originating from these two sources, being Logitix and Ticket Evolution. And so being that those are two of our partners in this endeavor, we're also getting very high level access to inventory that you're going to be seeing across the market as well, which allows us to have incredible coverage in terms of sheer volume of the amount of inventory that we're able to show the end user.
So how difficult, or maybe difficult isn't the right word, what does that partnership conversation look like with the ticketing partners as a new company, as a new entrant in here, doing something cool and unique and doing something that is extremely fan focused, which ultimately results in filling the seats and taking care of the inventory that's published for an event? What does that look like when you approach them?
It's incredibly challenging. It's something that has taken easily 12 to 14 months for some companies to integrate, and ones that we are still working on. We've been at it for now almost 2 years. We'll be coming up on 2 years in a bit. So it's a very lengthy process, just in terms of even finding the right stakeholders to talk to. You'd be surprised how hard it is to get in touch with the right people sometimes. And especially during COVID, where there are all the furloughs, that made it even more challenging. You're just seeing some of these development teams getting their footing again. So that exacerbated the situation. But I would say the most impactful tool for us was having an actual working product. And that's what we had always envisioned with the beta, was that we would use that as our selling tool to go to these platforms and convince them that, hey, this is what we're doing. Here's who we already have on board. Because then it becomes a game of the masses. If you're not involved, well, then you're losing out on potential reach. And so we were fortunate that StubHub was one of our very first partners in this. And again, it took a very long time to convince them and get them on board. But once we did, it certainly opened the doors and conversations with other platforms.
The first domino, so to speak, right? Once that starts to go, you pick up momentum, right? Which is cool. You mentioned something earlier, which I think is fascinating. You said you were early to the blockchain rush or gold mine or whatever people are calling it these days, right? How do you see, now that you're fully entrenched in the ticketing business, right? You're trying to upend making ticket search something that's palatable or bearable for the fans, but not a chore. How do you see blockchain and the wonderful NFT market playing into the ticketing market? How do you see those worlds colliding?
Yeah, I see tickets ultimately becoming a piece of memorabilia that serves function just beyond that kind of store of value of a memory. Obviously, it will be your entrance into a venue, but I think there will definitely be a transactional component to it as well. You know, where you're at concessions and you're using your ticket to buy food, to buy merchandise, and that ticket lives on as memento. Being attached to that are videos, articles, etc., whatever it is, highlights, photos or videos from your own phone, camera roll that are attached to that ticket, and it becoming a real kind of living, memorable experience for you. My foundation for blockchain and NFTs, it is instilled in utility. I still think we're a long way away from the right solution being there within the industry. And again, you asked me the question of how do you prioritize certain features or what in terms of what you want to build. And I think this has been, again, something I'm proud of that we haven't let distract us, is we've certainly had potential investors try to push us down the blockchain route. And it's, again, just trying to stay incredibly focused on what our goal is. We don't need blockchain to exist. It really would have no purpose for us. And until that is adopted more widely from the beginning ticketing companies, there's likely not a place for it for us. Perhaps maybe as an NFT, but certainly not as a transactional component. We certainly watch the market and keep our thumb on it, but it's definitely not a priority for us to integrate blockchain into ticketing. I'm excited to see who does it, and we'll be happy to champion them, but that's not our sandbox.
I think you're 100% correct, though, is that outside of the memorabilia, utility attached to an NFT is where the real value is. And how do you use that as a fan engagement mechanism? And again, it's all about the data. It's how are you using data to provide an experience rather back to your fan? But where is the point where you've amassed so much data on purchasing habits in certain markets, out of market, all these, that you start becoming a data provider back to, say, maybe a club or maybe a league or maybe a ticketing service yourself?
Yeah, business intelligence is certainly a core focus of ours for long-term growth. We see that potentially being our primary driver from a business model standpoint. In terms of a number, I wouldn't be able to give you one, but I can certainly tell you that our ambitions certainly go far beyond just ticketing. I did start with that. I am a Georgetown basketball fan, and that was the problem I was solving, but really, this vision started way before that. And I basically dreamed of creating a super app for sports fans, really being inspired by international models such as a WeChat, where you're able to perform a variety of functions within a single platform, and you don't have to have X amount of apps on your phone. We're only seeing the digital landscape within sports expand. And whether that be betting or streaming or ticketing, and rather than having to have Sleeper, ESPN, Yahoo, SeatGeek, StubHub, Ticketmaster, Buzzer, the list goes on and on, only having to have one app that can centralize information for you and cut through all of the noise is ultimately what we, you know, is ultimately what we hope to become. That's our end ambition. And I think if we were just to ever tackle ticketing, we would be a very successful company. And obviously, it's in a huge market. But that's what really gets me excited, that ticketing is just our launching point to be able to expand our value proposition into these other verticals.
That's great to hear, Brandon. And kudos for you for standing your ground that if we don't necessarily need to have a particular technology, if it doesn't make, you know, sense for what you're doing or the business model, don't shove it in just because it's cool. Are there any within the next years things grouped that you would like to see on the horizon? Anything that you can share or announce right now?
Yeah, you will certainly see offerings beyond just ticketing on our platform within the next year. I'll leave it at that. But again, we want to provide as much value to the end user as possible. And ticketing is just the start for us.
No, I like it. Keep us in suspense and keep us watching.
I can't give away our trade secrets.
That's fair.
So I got a question for you as well. Is that, look, we get to do what most people only dream about, and that's make a career in sports as a non-player, right? And I think at this point, I'm not going to be picked up by the South African rugby team. As much as I think it's an erroneous decision on their part, I don't think I'm ever going to be a Springbok, but we can talk about that in a different episode. But what advice do you have, Brandon, for the next Brandon coming out, the next Swoop coming out? What advice do you have that you would, as yourself, have liked to have had when you started your journey?
I think it's resoundingly start as small as possible. It's something I went into this knowing, and I tried to follow my own guidance. And I think I fell victim to the technology side of being able to do more than just that. It didn't matter from a technology standpoint if we just aggregated for the Yankees, for example, versus if we aggregated across the entire MLB. Like, it makes no difference in a tech stack. The difference, though, is that you're only dealing with one venue. And so you're able to cater that experience, personalize that experience far more if you're just focusing on one team, for example. And I think it would have allowed us to potentially be out in the market faster. You know, there's certainly pros and cons to it, but it would definitely be to start as small as possible. Yeah, you can learn a lot. You'd be surprised.
Right. Yeah, that's good advice. It's probably one of the more difficult things to follow, right? Because you have ideas and sometimes you have really big ideas, but to be able to chunk it down into little bite-sized pieces where one begets the other. It's extremely hard because it's learning what to say no to. And it's a very difficult world to live in, especially when you're creating something as unique as Swoopdom. And when you're creating something that has mass applicability, but you still got to have a narrow focus. So I can appreciate that as being a very daunting and difficult task for sure.
Yeah, it is. And you bring up a good point in terms of knowing what to say no to. It's one of the things you'll find, especially at this early stage in a company, is people will love to give you feedback, and I certainly welcome it. But at the end of the day, you have to make the decision. And one of my favorite pieces of advice that I've gotten, and in honor of Father's Day, I'll give the ode to my father. It's, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but basically, how can you make that piece of advice mean something in your own terms? So even if you don't agree with it completely, what if something is there, and allowing that to exist? And for me, that has been the most helpful. And I think it's hard, especially in the beginning. You don't want to hear other people being critical of your idea. They have no idea how much work goes into it, and the product is not good, and that there's so much left to do, but they're only saying it with the best of intentions. And so once you get over that hurdle of not taking it personally, but using that feedback to better your product, better your processes, and make it mean something in your own words, I think that's the best way to figure out what to say no to, because then maybe you're not saying no to everything after all.
Right, exactly. Right? That's spot on advice. Well done. Well done to your dad on that one. I love that. I might be stealing that myself. So take what you will from that. I like that. One of the things that I'm fascinated about, right, is providing a fan experience before you get into a venue. And I think this is what you guys are playing very nicely into, because again, at the top of the podcast, they said that buying tickets today primarily sucks, right? Because I either have a countdown, oh my God, the pressure's on now, my ticket's going to be given away, or I have to wait in line for when those tickets become available and I get put in a virtual queue. None of that really makes me feel very good. So my experience in getting access to a live event, to a game, to a concert, to a whatever it is, has been largely negative. And I don't see many people coming to try and fix that problem. People focus on when I'm in the building, make sure that people are having the best experience possible, make sure that we're providing enough food and bev and enough merchandise and all that, and entry, exits, and everyone's safe. But I think I applaud you guys. And I applaud you for coming up with an idea of creating that fan experience earlier, because it matters, and it matters a lot. So look, thank you for taking us through this today. I mean, this has been fascinating. I know, Suzanne, I could probably keep talking for about another 27 hours on this stuff over here, because it's something that we're incredibly passionate on. But I want to throw it over to you, Suzanne. Maybe any last questions or comments that we have for Brandon?
You're absolutely right, John. We can definitely talk about this for days, and from the technology standpoint, from the journey of an entrepreneur. Brandon, thank you so much for all of the valuable insights that you've offered. Just wanted to ask if you had any parting thoughts for the audience, anything that you'd like to share before we wrap up?
I hope you check us out and that you use our platform. We are building this for fans, making your life easier. A big part of our strategy is going to be word of mouth growth. And part of when we talk about the product not being good enough, we only get one shot with a user, and we want to make sure that is a great experience so that they in turn go and tell their friends about us. Please give us a look. Definitely give us feedback. That's the only way we can get better. And thank you very much for having me on. It was an absolute pleasure.
Likewise, it was a pleasure as well. And for folks to check it out, where should they go?
Swoop.com.
I like it.
yeah, exactly.
Brandon, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time this afternoon. And please check out Swooped whenever you can. With that, we will bring our episode to a close. But thank you so much for taking the time to listen. Please feel free to offer John and I any feedback on this and future episodes. Until next time, take care, and we'll talk with you soon.